Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soldier Channel, Sports in Depth for the show. It's a Sunday. It's a Olympic Finals Sunday. And every day is a gold medal day. And the good Lord lets you get up and see another day. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soldier Channel, Sports in Depth for the show. Dear Lord, we open up with a prayer, as we do every show. Start from the top with John Coltrane's. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. Thank you, Lord. Little things we so largely take for granted. More importantly, dear Lord, let your way be our way. Thank you for the blessings forthcoming that have come unseen, unbeknown, all undisturbed. Bless your darling son, Jesus, dear Lord, that died that we have the right to the tree of life. Dear Lord, although you may not be everybody's God, you are God all by yourself. The lady once said, you are God all by yourself. And the one only true God. Lord, bless our families here, our families all over the world, our president, my friends and family in Brazil, and always our number one listener, Rosie and her dad. Happy Father's Day, Feliz Dia, goodbye in Brazil, and the greatest father of all, you. Name your darling son Jesus, we simply say amen. Happy Father's Day, Feliz Dia de Pais. In me, país, de Teodoro, Brazil. As usually, I imagine Rosie from Voltaíra should be listening in. I want to say hello to, hopefully, she's listening to Elke in São Paulo. Happy Father's Day to my fiado, Chiquinho Alameda, and Deixio Costamacio Jr., national promoter. All of the fathers there in Brazil, Geraldo, the manager of the Pan America Hotel. Alberto, mi muito bom amigo, trabalhando em Hotel Panamericano. Alberto, Ricardo, a.k.a. Al Pacino. All my other friends and fathers, I got to think of some other names too. The dads there, all the guys over at Marina Park, and those Justino, and all the men over at Trabajada, going down there to the Bajaca area, saying hello to all the guys down there. And before we start, and I got Justino here, we got to do a quick reprieve. Dusty, let's get the update on the not-so-dead Kenny Norton.
I shouldn't even laugh, but that was kind of funny. But no, I panicked because when I was we were on the air, and I heard Marcos Osuna, who does the ESPN Friday Night Fights. Mm-hmm. He said Ken Norton, critical, he had a stroke, and he was 69 on the day he had the stroke. Mm-hmm. And then I heard the word death. So in that concept,
we thought he had passed. Luckily, yeah. Though, it was mic on, lights off, so we had the mic on, lights off, so we weren't live on here. But so the update on Kenny, he's doing better. 69 years old, had it. Yeah, I mean, that's some kind of birthday gift, a stroke on your birthday.
I'm telling you, some birthday gift right on his birthday. And he's in the hospital, and the thing that disturbed me that he is a world champ and fought the best of the world, highly touted sports figure plus a movie star. I didn't see anything in the paper.
Once again, you and this illustrious crew we have here on Blake Radio, Dusty,
I haven't heard a word about it. We're talking about a guy who fought Muhammad Ali three times, who fought George Foreman, who wouldn't fight Frazier because they were friends, who became the heavyweight champion of the world, who fought Larry Holmes. And this is, in the words of Harold Wesson, sad and touching.
And the thing is, somewhat of a movie star because he played in a very poignant.
That's the part too kind. You're right. A Mendingo, and I believe he played
and that was a tremendous piece. A tremendous piece depicting. I was a fanatic. This author called Kyle Anstart.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that wrote the Mendingo series. It must have been about six books, and I absorbed all of them. But the main book was Mendingo, which was at least 3 inches thick.
Wow!
And he played the leading role of Mendingo, and he went on to other endeavors in the movies. But of course, you know, tragically, he had that accident, and which left him in poor health. But he had come back, you know. But what I'm saying, to having said all of that, not even a column, not even a line, not even on Sports Beat or Sound Beat.
You know what? It's Dusty. You're right. I mean, nobody. I haven't read anything about this guy. Heard anything about it. We're talking about a guy who was at one time the heavyweight champion of the world. Dusty, hold on a second. We're going to take a quick plug, and then Mel Smith Jr. will bring the Sports to Destination.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
And now, without further ado, bringing to you the Sports to Destination intro, the one and only Mel. Junior.
Well, thank you, Doctor. The Sports in Depth Nation is here. The Sports in Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I'm here. We're here via the Blake Radio Network. And the straw that stirs the drink is here. And that is Doc Stanley. Take it away, Doc.
Thank you, Rooney. And here we go, gang.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best, featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
But that, something to... Let's get back to Destino. This has to be kind of... You know, Dusty, it's kind of...
Yeah.
Soul-touching, man, that we haven't heard. And we're talking about...
You know, I even went to my computer, because usually the computer's like a newspaper. And I went into sports, and I wrote down Ken Norton, heavyweight champ. And it just had Ken Norton's bio, and this, that, and the other, but nothing about his hospitalization.
So what's so wild about that, Dusty, is, you know, that trilogy of fights, you know, with he and Ali. I mean, Ali was always my guy. And I got to tell you, Dusty, and you being a former champion fighter would know, his style used to give Ali fits with his offense.
He used to give him fits because he was the original. In fact, his style, if you guys remember, and I know I'm going back in my Asian days, but his style was similar to Archie Moore and the old Mongoose type of defense. And yes, of course, and you're right. He always used to give Ali a fit.
He caught Ali on the downhill side. If Ali caught him, he'd have caught Ali at his apex. He wouldn't have been no problem. As he was no problem for George Foreman. As he turned out to be no problem for Larry Holmes. I mean, his style was a problem for Ali, for that Ali, as we always have to understand in the words of the great Marion B. Boykin. B stands for black, bodacious, brilliant brother. He caught Ali, the second stage of Ali. If he caught the first Ali, the guy that was undefeated, the guy who was stripped, the guy who lost 3.5 years, Ali would have ran through him. As the same with Joe Frazier. He'd have ran through Joe. He'd have ran through Norton like a hot knife through butter. But his style was a problem for that.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that. Ken Norton was too much of a fighter.
He was too much of a good fighter. He lived off of, listen, Cooney knocked him out in the first round. Cooney knocked him out in the first round, Dusty. Knocked him out in the first round.
I dismiss it.
How can you dismiss it? Cooney was sitting on the ropes. Knocked out in the first round. Bam! No, it doesn't matter, Doc. Bam, boomy, bammy.
Maybe, no, it doesn't matter. I dismissed that.
He would not have given the first Muhammad Ali any problem.
No, Dusty, you're dead wrong on that, man.
He would not have given the first Muhammad Ali. He lost two or three fights anyway.
You divided Muhammad Ali in thirds. One, two, and three. That's nonsense, man.
How can it be nonsense, Dusty?
The first Ali was stripped.
That guy lost three and a half years. That guy doesn't lose the 3 years.
I kind of agree with you both. In the sense that Ali goes to Kenny Norton like a hot...
I mean, this is all we have to know, fellas. Even Ali that fought Kenny Norton went 15 rounds with a broken jaw. With a broken jaw, and he still beat him 2 out of 3 times.
It would not happen in this sense, Doc. I don't buy this, man. I don't think anybody beats the first pre-3 year layoff Ali. I don't think anybody beats that Ali.
Well, let me ask you guys something. You know, here, Muhammad Ali, tough heavyweight champion, the whole 9 yards, a 9-0. Upstart, just out of the Olympics, beats him and embarrasses him.
Oh, he's an old man. Ali, that's not an old man. In fact, you bring up a very good point, because the reason why Ali would not have, he didn't fight Kenny Norton again, because Ali's goal, I'll never forget this, Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Town, Sports Network for the show. Rosie, looking for you to Skype and let us know you're listening. I mean, I remember when Ali lost to Spinks. And I remember calling Madison Square Garden, the late John Francis Avery Condon, Patty Dreyfus, and the whole guard said, Doc, Mel, Ali wants to win the title for a third time, and he knew if he gave the title to Kenny Norton, he would not get it back. So what did he do? Okay, he gave it to Spinks. Now, what did Spinks do? Spinks said, hey,
Hold on.
Spinks took Avery. But this is his thinking. And this, you take your hat off to Spinks. Spinks says, hold on. I got a mandatory to fight Kenny Norton. But ho. There's two things here. I took the title from Ali. I'm going to, one, give Ali a title shot again. And two, more importantly, who am I going to make more money with? Kenny Norton or Muhammad Ali? I'm going to fight Ali. Now, Kenny, what does Kenny do? They give Kenny the title. Kenny Norton never won the title in the ring, okay? N-E-V-R, Nunca, that's a Portuguese disrespect, never won the title in the ring. And what does he do? He lost it the first time he defended it. The first time he defended it, sayonara, Larry Holmes, who wasn't at 100%.
Yes, Larry Holmes, but that fight was a war. It wasn't a walkover by Larry Holmes. It was a war. Come on,
well,
man.
Dusty, but he lost it. But you know what, Dusty?
So
you
what
bring
if he lost it? Everybody loses.
But you make it look like it was a walkover. No, it's, no, I'm going to tell you something, Dusty. Now that I think about it, 15 rounds? Well, you know what? I think what might have happened in your defense, and I've got to stop this, but I think the powers that be might have held some ill feelings against Kenny for him getting the title like that, which would have been totally unfair because he got it. I mean, you look at this situation with Martinez, and that fight is coming up really soon, too. Martinez and Chavez, I mean, Chavez wind up getting the title that Martinez had because Martinez didn't do the mandatory. Hold on, gang, real quick. Dr. Ice would be joining us tonight. He called and he said he was going to join us. We're looking for the hoopster. And Ross.
Yeah, yo, I'm here.
Cincinnati should be joining us pretty soon. Me and Cincinnati will be going up to the Giants, the Jets camp tomorrow. C-Wings, you with us?
In studio.
Cincinnati C, baby, is in-house. Cincinnati
C.
The Hoopster.
C-Wings.
Mel Smith Jr. Our Western should be joining us soon. We'll get to football in a minute. Hoopster, let's go to you real quickly. USA The 107-100 game against Spain, was it as close as the score showed?
Oh, that was close, very close. Also, we got to congratulate the United States women's basketball team also. So, and
oh,
also,
wow,
LeBron
that was
James
terrific.
Made history. He got a gold medal, MVP's final, and MVP. Last person did that was Michael Jordan.
Well, now, when Michael won it with that 92 team, did Michael win the playoff MVP that year?
Yes, he did.
Okay, he won the playoff MVP, and he won the season MVP in 92?
Also? Yes, he did.
Okay,
yes.
All right, then. So, second time it's done. He's got them all. Spain really played a good game, supposedly.
Yeah, they were good. You got to give it to Spain. But it's also amazing. I thought Argentina will be in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Argentina's better than Spain, you ask me.
Well, I mean, everybody thought Brazil was better than Mexico, and Mexico beat them. So sometimes you may be
exactly.
better, but you got to be better on the day that you're participating. Okay, now with Hoopster, USA, back-to-back gold medals. The women, this is their fifth in a row. Hundreds of games in a row. I mean, they're rocking and rolling. Maybe they get a minute shot. So Spain won the silver. Who came in? Who won the bronze in the men's basketball?
Russia?
Wow.
That's Russia.
Russia. No, Doc Stanley Sports, I can't
block. Came in third, yeah.
I think Russia. Yeah, I think Russia.
I want a Doc Stanley Sports in-depth blogspot.com.br. Check that site out, will you please? DocStanleySports.com is my site. But on my blog, in looking at my audience, Russia has moved into my number one listeners of people blogging on. And what I'm going to do, too, fellas, starting next week, Sports in Depth is going to be on my blog and go back for some of the live shows. So, Dusty, you're going to have to censor you. You know what I mean? No Spanish. Okay? No Spanish. Improve on your English. And, you know, we're going to...
You mind if I speak Russian?
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised. You know what? Nobody.
You say vodka?
You know, we can't wait to get here to get back to each other. And what I'm going to do, too, fellas, during the course of the week, if the slot is open, I'm going to try to do a midweek sports in depth. You know, if the slot is open because there's a big cry for Russ to be on, and also it's just so great. Being a vodka, it's amazing you said it. My second time in Brazil, 2007, I'm in Fortaleza, and a cow is coming down the street. And I asked Lucia Martin, who's one of the top female disc jockeys in Fortaleza, and I asked her, how do you say that in Portuguese? And she said, vodka. I said, well, I can't, no problem. That I remember quite well. I used to say cow, vodka. Hey, I got no problem saying cow in Portuguese. I'm a little surprised that Rosie hasn't joined in, but I hope Elke is listening in out of San Paulo. Also, somebody take care of better be asleep. And once Happy Father's Day to everybody here on the panel. You know, in Brazil, it's amazing. Mother's Day is celebrated in Brazil across the world. In Brazil, when we do it, but Father's Day in Brazil is the second Sunday in August. So all the fathers on the panel, it's
happy
Father's Day
happy
to y'all.
Happy Father's Day in Brazil. Happy Father's Day, everybody in Brazil.
Yeah, Happy Father's Day, you know what I mean? And that's it. Gang, now USA won the gold. And
Doc, that's the 14th gold medal for the men's basketball. 14 gold medals.
That's the most in basketball in Olympic history, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, yeah. That, because at one time, it's automatically. I mean, I look back. Yeah, it was amazing, too, Hoopster. The 37 points that Carmelo Anthony, who supplanted star Stephon Marbury, who were both New Yorkers, they're both former Knicks. But then I thought, you know, when you went back to when the games were first played, you had the shot clock. Guys were all collegiate players. So, I mean, guys are winning by scores of 79, 62, 60. And so you didn't have guys. I look at that great team that had Oscar and Jerry West, and you look at Oscar, who's such an unstoppable. I mean, I'm just like me and Rooney. Rooney always calls on the way, hey, Doc, I'm not going to hold you. I know you're a busy man in the world, so that means we're going to talk at least 45 minutes. And we started talking about Oscar Robertson, and the thing that was just so profound about Oscar was his ability to play and make a team better. I remember when they traded him to the Bucks, and I was reading, I don't know if it was Dave DeBusschere's book or Walt Frazier's book. I think it must have been Frazier's book. And they said that when they heard that Oscar was going to the Bucks with Lou Alcindor at the time, they knew that was going to be, I mean, the Bucks were an outstanding team, but with Oscar, they became a great. Oscar Robertson led Milwaukee Bucks with the first team in NBA history to win 60 games, was it two or three years in a row? I mean, and had Oscar been 4 or 5 years younger, they would have won 3 or 4 championships in a row, as it was when he hit the Bucks.
Exactly.
He had 19 points his first year, 17, 14, so he went down the scoring. But the team, I mean, any given night, Oscar just could just take over. But the thing that stood out in the stat that I checked out the other day was, I said, you know, what did Oscar do his first year in the league? I had that thing around here, too, right in front of the lungs. But Oscar led the NBA in assists his first year in the league. 9.5 was actually 10, because in Oscar's day, they didn't count. If I passed the ball to Dusty, he shot a jump shot. I didn't get the assist. But the thing that was so profound about this, here's a guy who was the Collegiate Player of the Year 3 years in a row, the all-time leading scorer in college basketball history. And you would think, maybe we lead the league in scoring. He scored 30 points that game. Dipper, he probably would have led if Dipper wasn't around. He's free throw, but he led the league in assists, and he won the MVP in the All-Star game that year. It was Rookie of the Year, MVP in the All-Star game. I remember Rooney was staggered when I talked about this during the week, but I remember Jerry West, the great Jerry West, Zeke from Cabin Creek, him and West were All-American forwards who went to the guard spot to show how great they were as basketball players. And West hit the jump shot that won the game for the West in the All-Star game. And the announcer, I think it's still Jack Twyman, bring Jerry West. Hey, Jerry, great shot. Congratulations. Jerry, can you talk us about that play? And West looked at it with this look like, West, you know, all we were trying to do, and let me say this again, all we, the greatest players in the game assembled, all we, All-Stars, future Hall of Famers, and first round draft picks, first team, All-NBA. All we were trying to do, and he looked at Twyman like, you should kind of know this, he said, like his face, just get the ball to Oscar. Oscar Palmer Robinson. I just never forget that. All we were trying to do was get the ball to Oscar. And you can't say much about
that. Doc, I have to say this. What I love about the great Oscar is he's not bashful. He knows he has skills. I heard an interview once when they were basically asked him, how would you have went about holding Michael Jordan, Oscar? How would you have held Michael? And without missing a beat, Oscar shot back to him, Doc, I think maybe you'd like to ask Oscar how he would have held me.
I remember I asked Walt Frazier one time.
Yeah,
the Knicks are playing the Bulls, and Clyde is making his move way over to the he's got to go upstairs now and get on the air. And I said, Clyde, the great Clyde Frazier, the greatest all-around guard I ever saw play day in, day out. And only Oscar Robertson was better than Clyde, not by a whole lot, okay? And I said, Clyde, how would the old Knicks handle Jordan? And you know what he said? Rooney, sit down. Sit down, because if you're not, you're going to sit down. He said, all we would do was put Earl on him.
I didn't know, it's funny, Doc, because one day we were having lunch. You know, one day we were having lunch in the Garden Calf, and the Garden Cafeteria, Doc and I just shooting the breeze with some of the players and, you know, notable celebrities. And I've never been a starstruck type of guy. Doc, and you remember this, Doc, in walks my all-time favorite basketball player, as you said, Oil the Poil Monroe, walked through the door. I almost fell on the
floor. No finer human being walks the earth than Earl Monroe. And I remember when the young Nets, I remember this is 1970, it's the beginning of 1973-74 season. I remember the year quite well because I started, in the broadcasting, Dr. Frank Bannister, my first mentor, had me covering the game. And the Nets were stacked. They got Julius. They had got Julius, Brian Taylor, first-round draft pick out of Princeton from Prep Amboy. They got the whopper Billy Paul in the hole. Just drafted Larry Keenan out of Memphis, who played against the Walton in the championship game. And I just remember Brian. Somebody talking to Brian Taylor, and he said, "But Earl, he's a pearl of a player, but more than that, he's a pearl of a person." I remember him I'm saying about Clyde, and it was they were ecstatic because they beat the Knicks in the Garden. This young team beat the Knicks in the Garden, which was a tremendous barometer for what their season was going to be like. And I remember talking to Dave DeBusschere afterwards Dave was standing, and the Knicks were kind of muffed by this, you know what I mean, to get beat by these guys in the Garden. And I remember telling Dave that, you know, he said some nice things. What he said, I said, you know, he said, you're a great player. And DeBusschere was a great player. I think the one word that describes Dave DeBusschere is the one word that describes you guys here, and it's what you guys bring to this show every single time, every minute you're on here, and, you know, led by C-Wing, led by Dusty, Mel, Lady A, the Hoopster, Howard West. It doesn't matter who you know, but it's like the way Dusty reads the brings, the consistency of greatness. That's what makes a great player. You know, the consistency. You know, you hit 300 7-8 years in a row, not 2 years, and then you go to this was the consistency of Dave DeBusschere. I remember Bill Gallo, how much I miss Bill and wish I'd spend no time, but when DeBusschere retired, he did a big cartoon, you know, nobody will be able to fill the shoot. And DeBusschere's first game as a Knick, I think DeBusschere had 23 points, 16 rebounds, and 9 assists, almost had a triple-double. Everybody knew when he was the missing link.
I think he did have a triple-double, Doc, unless I'm mistaken.
He just missed it by. I got the stat. I know I'm gonna go in the hole.
Okay.
He was close to it. But he may it was close. Yeah. He had 23 points, 16 rebounds. You know, when you look at that, all 50 greatest players. You know, it's the Knicks had DeBusschere, they had Lucas, they had Earl, they had Willis, they had five players. You know, who suited up at Knicks. I mean, Willis was always a Knick. DeBusschere came to the Knicks, as did Earl come to the Knicks. Clyde was always a Knick. And Patrick Ewing. Wow, they had six. What am I talking about? We had six guys. I got to get to
the
cap.
But DeBusschere a pitcher, too, wasn't he, for the White Sox?
Yeah, for the White Sox. In fact, if I'm correct, when he left Detroit, he was the player coach.
He also was the coach of the NBA, too.
Yeah, he was commissioner ABA. He was GM of the A. He was commissioner GM.
ABA.
And, you know, I'm surprised
right.
that I never thought of getting a autographed baseball from David. I don't understand. I never thought about that. You know, I've got him on autographs, this and that. And we talked about Oscar. And wanted to go real quickly to get a chance to get a plug. DocStanleySports.com is the site. Doc Stanley Sports. in-depth.blogspot.com.br. That's my blogspot. And in the Trust in God Sports in Depth Entertainment Artifacts Hall of Fame, Oscar Robertson, that we were talking about, I have two very unique things of Oscar's. One is I found a pair of Converse sneakers, and I got Oscar to sign them for me. Oscar Palmer Robinson. And in an old-timers game at the Garden, Jersey, and he said he promised a jersey to a kid in Cincinnati, but he gave me the shorts. And one of the things I remember is that I asked Sam Jones, I asked him to sign up. He says, I can't believe it. He said he's signed a pair of Oscar shorts, and Oscar signed it. So Earl is on there, and Oscar Robertson. Those are some of the things in the Trust in God Sports and Dev Entertainment Artifacts Museum and Hall of Fame. Earl Monroe. We have an Earl Monroe sneaker autographed as well as a All-Star jersey from one of those games that Earl gave me. Walt Frazier gave me his sneakers when he scored his 10,000 point. I have
Pumas.
The Pumas. Oh yeah, Pumas. Oh yeah. I had a host of his Pumas out one time, but I don't know where that. Well, I know that's right. But I have one pair. He signed that a game used. Another pair. I had Puma had a promotion. And they gave me a pair, and I got him to autograph those too. So he's got that. I remember the story, Clyde, preseason game, and I'm walking in, and Clyde is watching. It's about halftime of the other game, or maybe end of the third quarter. So Clyde's going to start to go in and get dressed, and he's standing in the back there, and a kid happened to be near there, and he says, but Mr. Frazier, have an autograph? And Clyde says, well, you know, I don't sign anything after the game, but after the game, I'll sign it for you. Because it's okay. And so he's walking toward the locker room, and I'm walking with him. Because him and Harry Robertson, Clyde was the last guy to leave the locker room. The media loved Clyde, and he was the last guy to leave. And I remember, I said, Clyde, I said, you know, after the game, got to go to autograph, like, your autograph for me. He said, well, Stan, give it to me now. I said, Clyde, but you, you know, you told the kid you don't sign after the game. He said, Stan, that's the kid. That's not you, you know? And I just thank God that those kind of guys kind of, I remember it was at another fair, because Clyde had told me something. He said it took him 2 years to adjust to no longer be Wall Street. And we were at some affair, and I saw Clyde in the corner there autographing this shirt. And then about 5 years ago, he stand. He said, "This is for you, sincerely, Walt Clyde Frazier." I don't, you know, the great line that Mark Jackson said about Walt Frazier is that the thing about Frazier is that in the height of battle, no matter how intense the action, Clyde was always cool and reserved. Knicks up by 7 or down by 3 with 2 seconds left to go, you could never tell on Walt Frazier's face. Because he was just, they talk about Jerry Butler being an Iceman and George Gervin, but there was nobody I saw greater from an all-around perspective and more reserved and just the great, the one only, my friend, Walt Clyde Frazier, who was a big guy. He loves white wine. Gentlemen, we had some football played. Hoopster, real quickly.
Can I say one thing? Can I say one
thing?
And next week, I'm going to announce the top athletes from the 21st century. I know you're going to love to hear that.
So you put the list together? You can't tell us this week?
No, I'm almost done. You want me to name some? I got five of them already. You want to hear?
Well, give us five.
I got Michael Phelps, Tiger Woods, Kobe Bryant, Eli Manning, and LeBron James.
Okay, now what's the story with this trade? I mean, you sitting here on this jabbing, man. How did Howard wind up in L.A.? Come on now.
Who?
A fluke.
I said Kobe now. Definitely.
No, I mean, Howard. How did he wind up in L.A.? With the big trade.
Oh, Howard? Well, first of all, Alonzo wanted to get rid of him. So they got to get rid of him. He wanted to go to L.A., but he still didn't stop that extension. That's the catch.
So what you're telling us here, he'll go to L.A., have a great time. Decide if he likes it, he'll stay. If he doesn't like it,
exactly.
So we still can find him in Brooklyn.
Won't be surprised. I won't be. If he likes L.A., he'll stay. If not, he might come to the Nets. Don't be surprised. And Biden didn't sign no extension either with the Sixers. There's a catch to that, y'all. There's a catch to it.
No, I mean,
you don't sign extension. You don't sign extension. You're not going to stay there.
No question.
Wow.
I mean, these guys are not excited. Real quickly, you know, talking about the Olympics, this is going to be part of an Olympic special. I want to salute Gabrielle Douglas, the first ever American and African American to win the all around and a team gold medal on the team. I want to say also to and Harold had called me about this, and
did a female boxer win the Olympics, the United States?
Clarissa Shields, 17 years old, won in the middleweight.
Monster she is.
Yeah, she did.
And you know what?
Okay.
She's the youngest, woman's standpoint of view, she's the youngest ever and the first ever, and she's the youngest to win a gold medal in the
gold
Olympics
medal.
Since about 1927. I got to find out. But she did also, American.
She hasn't even finished high school.
And I tell you what, nobody be taking her lunch money, that's for sure.
Ain't nobody gonna touch your money. She's gonna be a bodyguard, that's for sure. She's gonna be a bodyguard and the bully.
That's what.
I remember when I went to high school, Ulysses S. Mercer. If you remember, Dusty, he was a Golden Glove champion. And nice little guy, and he walked through the halls. And you know, and we knew each other, so you know, I'd grab the collar, man. I should take your lunch money. Get out of here. And we would laugh, and. But one day they said some guy inadvertently made the mistake of really trying to roughhouse him, and you know he Golden Glove champion 2 times, Golden Glove, and he just took him out. Boys High was a great school. In fact, I saw my good. I hope he may be listening now. The Boone Brothers. As a kid, I grew up on Madison Street, and some of the legends of Madison Street was down to Park Clifford Scott, Mousy, Jerome Edwards. You know, they would say, "Is Jerome around? Who the heck is Jerome?" But we call him Mousy, Clifford. Lee Clyde was I was telling him about the team. I remember them, and Gerald Richardson, what a great third baseman he was. Clifford Scott, cool, reserved second baseman. Mousy Edwards, a long time, was a second base. He was left-handed. Then Butch came along. Mario Gunn, Lewis in right field, Clyde in center field, Kenneth Richardson in left field. The Boone brothers were catching and pitching. I forgot who played first base for them all the time. Maybe it might have been Jesse who played, but met him yesterday. Good to see him. And we're looking to at some other gold medal winners who won. It was really it was amazing too. He came in third. Will Clay. He took him in second in the triple jump. But when I was watching it, he had taken the lead, but he was superseded by Christian Taylor, his Florida college mate. And so the Americans came 1 and 2 in the triple jump. They won the gold and the silver. As we know, Clarissa Shields, she won the women's gold. So the Americans did bring a boxing back. Gabby, gold all around, and also with the team. The Williams sisters, once again, doubles champions. And
oh,
Serena.
Yeah, Doc.
Yeah.
Can I say something? It's a little long-winded, but it's funny today about the Williams sisters, especially Serena.
Dusty, we got 2 hours here, Dusty. We can't go through the
okay.
Two-day ordeals now.
No, it's not a two-day ordeal. It's a five-week ordeal. No,
go ahead, Dusty.
I read a lot of papers, and of course, today's my reading day. And I read something. I don't know if you guys read the Post today. Anybody? There was an article. Remember when Serena was criticized for dancing?
Yeah.
And it was somewhat racial and all that. I read mm-hmm. something that was shocking today.
What's
which
that?
Was apropos to two of the other gold medal winners. Okay. It says here, Serena critics racist? Ain't that a crip? Now, this is the article. I think it was
wow.
this guy, Phil Mushnick.
Mm-hmm.
It says, why did some folks get so bent out of shape when the USA's Serena Williams did a crip walk after winning the Olympics gold medal at Wimbledon? If it's not as if the Crips are a murderous street gang or as if our prisons are stuffed with them, not to mention that our morgues are swollen with Crips and their victims. It's not as if the Williams have... And remember, he said, that the Williams half-sister and single mother of three, Yatunde Price, was shot and killed by Robin Mayfield, who was a 25-year-old Crip. So what Serena was doing, she was doing a Crip dance. And somebody got bothered, bent out of shape because of the fact that she was doing something that she wasn't, you know, that she wasn't supposed to do because she's a person of color. Now, you mentioned, the reason I'm saying this, because you mentioned a whole litany of us being disturbed over the fact that they always criticize us and always find something to knock us, even our president. But listen to this, folks. My comfort zone is the fact that the criticizer is going home with no medal. The one who's criticized, the Serenas and the Gabrielles, are the winners. And that's the comfort zone. You can cry all you want to, sucker. You can complain all you want to, but you don't have a bronze. You don't have a silver, much less a gold. And I'm the champion, you're not. And the reason I'm saying this, because I segue into what happened today, which made me laugh, was the fact that the Russian heavyweight won his gold medal, okay? What happens? When he won his gold medal, he goes into a Russian dance. You seen the Brothers Karamazov where they squat and they start kicking the legs out, doom, 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 doom. So that's what he was doing. He threw himself on the ground. He did a Russian-style hip-hop and danced, and everybody was applauding him, praising him. Oh, he's so happy, this, that, and the other. Now, the second time around, the Cuban kid comes up. He wins his gold medal. And he starts doing a Victor Cruz salsa dance. Da, 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 and he's dancing all over the place. I'm serious. And I'm saying, I wonder if they're going to criticize him. So
no.
what I'm saying behind that is that the fact that those who are critics are the losers, the racist losers who always want to find something wrong with the fact that we exude enthusiasm and we exude the happiness of being successful, but they got to find something to knock us down. And I'll finish up with saying, you mentioned something about some lady came up and he says, well, President Obama has to learn how to walk. And guess what? All along, I've known that President Obama, being a brother, He walks like a Diddy Bopper, the way we used to walk in Spanish Harlem. He bops when he comes to the. He bops and slides the way we used to do it. That's our stuff. But he was
cool president
because he doesn't walk white. And you know,
no,
you know what I'm saying? My God, these people have nothing else to do but try to attempt to find something wrong with whatever we do, even though we are more successful than they are. They're the losers. They're the ones in the shadows. We're the ones in the spotlight, and they have got to find something wrong with what we're doing. You know,
okay.
And they're basically, you know, this is to feed you guys. I don't know if you guys have any opinion, but
I want to play something real quick. Hold on, just quick.
Yeah.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views of.
And with that,
Doc always keep those.
And listen, also, you didn't realize the time, but okay, here we go.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth.
Wow.
What you said is just and Musk niggas is a guy. Remember, had this attack on Art Russ some time ago.
He did a hit piece on Arthur George, Doc. Nothing less than that. It was an absolute hit piece on Arthur George Russ Jr.
You're talking about. And now that you open this can of worms, I hope Dr. Ira joins us. Cincinnati C is still with us. And, you know, you look like there's Olympics, and there were things that we talked about on the Olympic Special Wednesday. Dr. Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Show, the Channel Sports Network, the show. And, you know, there was the Greek athlete that was sent home because she made some comments that had some racial overtones to it. Okay, then you had some guys who were arrested in a crowd when they made some derogatory animal similarities to the Nigerian team during one of the events, okay? Then you had another young lady who decided to go home because of some supposedly neo-Nazi ties. You had one of the Swiss football players who made a comment of racial injustice and racial inadequacies that he wound up going home. There was some racial tweeting done toward one of the judo players on the Brazilian team, who in turn the committee had made some comments, and one thing they said, you know, they was something they wasn't going to tolerate, and first of all, because of the injustice of it, and then the fact that, you know, Brazil is a racially multi-culture. We had that came about, and then here is Gabby. I mean, America always leading the forefront on racism and showing you how to keep African Americans in their place. Gabby, when she won the all-around, which was stunning, all those upset, and then it wasn't upset when they kind of recalculated things, and then when she won, the team won the gold medal again gymnastically, and then all of a sudden there was these stories about, well, really, her winning didn't have the luster or the caliber or the height of degree that it normally had, and we know now they were attacking her because she was African American. And then came the stories, there was a problem with her hair. Then we heard the story about, of course, and then, you know, something that all black men seem to be accused of. They had a deadbeat dad, you know what I mean? That came up. Then why was she wearing this color that wasn't the color of, I guess, red, white, and blue, and it just kept going on and on and on, which always happens here, and you just open up, and these are the ones that we heard about. I mean, let's go to the one, that's my
comfort zone because of the fact that she's the winner, and all these lopheads, eggheads, are the losers.
You know what, I'm going to go back to that real quick. Not only did they win the gold medal in doubles for the third straight Olympics, okay? But she also is the first American and African American, and that's what America has a problem when it's African interjected in it. The first African American to win a Golden Slam, okay, which means that she won all of the majors and a gold medal, okay? Her and Zena became the first team to win an indoor championship.
Exactly.
And the way she did, I mean, instead of saying her, it was lopsided. Annihilated. When she beat Sapova, she beat her. Sapova didn't win a game after 45 minutes. She won the first set, 6-love.
Yeah.
and then she won the second set 6-1. Okay? And, I mean, as often as things change, they remain the same. And when we got into that, what we talked about the other day, Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake with an Epic Rainbow, so the channel Sports Network Show. It is a Sunday night. It is a Olympic special night. At the same time, too, we're looking for Dr. I to originally join us. So he should be joining us pretty soon.
He's in the house. He's in the house.
Oh, okay. Hang on, Dr. I. We're going to get to your basketball in a minute. Also, we won a couple of heads to the African-American first in the Olympics. As you know, the basketball team scored the most points ever scored in a Olympic game, supplanting Brazil, who had scored 138 points back down in 88 against Spain. And it's funny that they won the medal against Spain. 156 points is the most ever scored. They're 71%, they shot 71% from 1%. The floor.
Yep.
71% for the floor with a 79. They had 79 points at halftime. Carmelo Anthony broke the record for points scored in a Olympic game by an American player, 37 points. So plenty.
A total, yeah.
So plenty,
don't,
31 points.
On,
no, yeah. Well, I'm talking about we lost our time. The 31 points that was the record set by Stephon Marbury. And I wanted to mention, too, a name, you know, African American first. Gentleman by the name of John Baxter Taylor Jr. back in 1908 was the first African American ever to win a gold medal in the Olympics. He was a member of the 1600 meter, was a mile relay team, which broke a record. And you know, and they said something in this little piece that you know he was on the team when African Americans were seen as the lowest of society. And I'm saying you know that hasn't changed at all. You know what I mean? But he was on the team. He was 26 years old, and 5 months later, he died from typhoid pneumonia. But he was the first African-American ever to win a gold medal. We know Jesse Owens back in 36 won four, but he was the first one to ever win a gold medal. John Baxter Taylor Jr., 1908, a member of the world record 1,600-meter mile relay team, and that's just a little part of African-American history. And as we some African American first too, as you know, our team Gabby first ever to win all around, and a team goal. The African Americans dominated the team here. They won 156 points. You know, and I look back at some too that we didn't think about Dusty here and the rest of the crew.
Yeah.
Our friend who last month marked a year of having him on our show, and we're moving up toward a year of impact. Joe Frazier was the first African-American ever to win the heavyweight gold medal in the Olympics. Because if people remember, Floyd Patterson won it as a middleweight.
Right.
And
yeah,
Ali was a light heavy. No. Well, there wasn't a cruiserweight then. He won it. Patterson
right.
won
Ali was a light heavy.
And Ali won as light heavy. Joe was the one that won as a heavyweight. And
here's an Olympic name from the past for you, Doc.
Go ahead.
From back in the day, had the most total points of playing basketball, had the most total points with the total amount of games. Name for the past for you, Doc. Spencer Haywood.
Wow. Spencer Haywood, who played some ABA ball, also came out of college early. Wanted to play NBA. In fact, he was the pride and prize one time out there in Seattle of Bill Russell's. He was the head player out there. I remember reading about him.
Out of the Motor City.
Yeah, Detroit. You know, the guy knows so much about Detroit, too, is that people don't talk a lot about Derek Coleman, who's a guy who's done so much for his neighborhood. And Derek, you know, when Derek Coleman was on top of his game, there wasn't a better forward. Cut the power forward. There wasn't a better. Derek Coleman had I remember at a Big East tournament, and the great Dave Sims, and nobody does radio play-by-play football better than Dave. If you got a choice to listen to Dave Sims and watch it on TV, you're going to listen to Dave Sims. Or maybe you watch it on TV, but you cut the sound off. And Sims, as a tribute to me, by the grace of God, he said, Doc, I haven't had a lot of time to see Derek Coleman. What kind of guy is he? And I said, hey, man, he's a great player. He's a great guy. You know what I mean? He said, okay, Doc, yeah, he's great to me. I remember Walt Frazier was there. And Walt had told me, and Dave said, you know, a lot of the negativity that Derek got was a perception, you know. But as the forwards that I saw, there wasn't a forward in the game that could handle the ball like him. He could shoot the J from outside. He could take you down low. He played D, and he was a great. He still has the record for rebounding in Syracuse. I remember how hurt I was when he missed that big free throw. But Derek Coleman.
Yeah.
His first few years, he averaged was 19 points, 10 rebounds a game. Him and Kenny Anderson were the first Nets ever.
If Kenny doesn't get hurt, that team, you know, Kenny doesn't break his wrist. You know, he was never same player. But if you got Kenny and Coleman in there, some other pretty damn good players.
Well, we also had Pekovic was still with that team, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know the thing Dr. I, too, is that Coleman talked about that. We got Dr. I back, gang. Dr. I, we miss you. You got to stay with the thing that Coleman said in an interview that he's still upset because it was John Starks that broke his wrist. You know what I mean? And he was really upset.
That's that guy, John Starks.
I don't think it was intentional, but he said because that team was really on its way. That Daly as a coach.
It was.
Yeah, they had Daly as a coach. That Derek, number one overall draft pick. You had Kenny, who was in the doghouse with Fitch for a while now. And I'm just amazed at why guys won't play guys. It's supposed to be about winning. And then the Petrovic that came along. But then everything, Kenny got hurt. We know about Drazen. And I remember that car accident. And everything kind of went south a little bit then. But Dr. Stanley Sports Network with the Blake with the Network Rainbow Show, the Channel Sports Network Show. Dr. I, okay, let's talk now. What happened with this big trade, Howard to L.A.? What's going on here? What brought all this about?
Here's what it's all about. I give you some insight. One, obviously, it was great for the Lakers because now you have the team to compete for the championship. But another factor there, which very few people know about, is that Mitch Kupchak's contract is up after two more years. And basically, he can't stand Jim Buss just as we can't stand James Dolan. So the Poppers are great, like Jerry Buss and the papa of James Dolan, but the kids, just very typical of kids who were born with a spoon up there, as we say in Yiddish, they took us. Basically, they ain't the same as their papas. So they got a big problem out there with Jim Buss owning that team, and they got rid of Ronnie Lester, who was very, very competent, and the assistant to the big guy. And now the big guy is—he made that move because he's saying, "I'm out of here in 2 years. I'm going to put the best team on the court with the best chance of winning a championship in the next 2 years while Kobe is still healthy." So look at the team they're putting out there. That ain't chopped liver. So that's their answer. And Orlando's answer is they're on the cheap now. Okay, when they didn't take the two or three available coaches, and they named Jacques Vaughn as the head coach. That means they're on the cheap, and I experienced it myself when I was down there for the summer league. You can tell the organization is on the cheap. So what they're doing, which is the right thing, is they're going to. They got a lot of draft choices. They got Mo Harkless, who is Rod Thorne's going to regret giving up in this deal, and they'll build a team. Harrington's not that old, and so they got good players. And they got so many draft choices that they're going to build a team. What I don't understand is you got Bynum for Philly. They give away Iguodala, who was an all-star but not superstar. So basically, Bynum we know has a history of getting hurt. We know the team is made up of only several guys that are 6'4", who are very, very good players. And they got nothing in between. They don't have a power forward. They don't have a small forward. So I got to sort of scratch my head at that, giving away Mo Harkless, because I think Rod Thorne's going to get a little bit burned by that unless Bynum stays healthy. Bynum stays healthy, Rod Thorne's smart enough to put in the parts that he needs to be a contending team. But, you know, you got to compete, I think, with Miami for one or two more years when LeBron leaves and either goes to the Nets or goes to back to Cleveland. I think eventually he'll go back to Cleveland.
Are you serious? I don't think
LeBron. LeBron's contract will be up. When LeBron's contract's up, he will have won his championships there. And I think he'll go back to Cleveland. Or wind up with the Nets if you got to remember the big guy Dwight Howard's only got a 1 year deal. He's free agent again. So if he says, hey, I'm going to Brooklyn like he wants, he's got that option. And also, I think Bynum only has one more year in the contract, too. None of them have extended contracts.
I think the Nets that offered a lot more
I think that they should be the team that's the most upset by this deal because they offered a lot more for Howard than they've gotten in this trade with the traffic. They could have got a lot more.
What happened here is, see, Howard shot himself in the foot, or his agent shot himself in the foot, when he signed that deal last year for the 1 year. And then the Nets were forced, because of that situation, to sign Lopez. Once they sign Lopez, that means they can't deal Lopez until the middle of January.
But, so Doc, wasn't that his own fault? Because I believe he was an unrestricted free agent.
Who was?
Lopez.
Howard shot himself in the foot by signing the 1 year deal. In other words,
that's what I mean. He could have opted out and went to Jersey.
Right.
He could have opted out of that deal.
Well, he could have waited, put it that way. So he hurt himself. He hurt the Nets, et cetera, by signing that deal and put himself in, I'll call it, a compromised position. And the Nets had to protect themselves by keeping Lopez. And Lopez isn't chopped liver. Lopez healthy is one of the best offensive centers in the league. He's proven he can rebound, but he's also proven he can't defend. But the Nets have set themselves up with a winning team. They're not a championship team yet, but they're a winning team. So
they're
going to
be a good team, Doc. Now
they'll have at least a 500 record, and in 1 year, when they get Howard, which I think they will still do, then you're dealing with a team that can compete with any team.
What you're telling me, Dr. I, Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Vitter Network, Rainbow Soda Channel Sports Network Show, what you're telling me, and see, we're having the Cincinnati C, him in the hoops, I guess they'll be coming back. I mean, both of you guys are telling me that Howard wants to come to Brooklyn, but it seems his agent has done things to hinder that move. But there's a lot of validity in what you say. Well, you both said the fact that he did, it's a one-year contract. So, I mean, what if he gets out there in L.A. and likes L.A.? I mean,
If he likes it, he has the option of signing an extended contract with the Lakers.
No, I understand that. But from what I'm hearing from both of you guys is that he really wants to be a Brooklyn Net.
Yes, that's what he said all along. So he could not become a Brooklyn Net guaranteed until, if everything had worked out right, the middle of January, if a trade was made between the Nets and Orlando. But why wait around for that? Why not just play a year in L.A. with Kobe and
maybe get a ring,
MVP point guard, and go get a ring and make, you know, and on his own thought process, maybe he will like it out there and say, hey, I want to stay here and not come to Brooklyn.
And that's what he's talking about.
Let me ask you a question.
Doesn't Howard have to go to a medical because he has an injury? He's facing.
Well, he basically.
Or am I mistaken?
That's been done already. So, we don't know. That's been done already, okay? What we don't know is, just as we don't know with Manning, is how will he hold up after the surgery when he's playing again.
They passed on the medical. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, because I heard that trade, I'm saying this guy's hurt.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they're going to waste money on him.
Yeah.
But, you know, somebody asked the question the other day, what was Kobe's reaction to it? Who the heck is Kobe? Kobe approves or disapproves who goes on to the Lakers?
Each team has a guy. Yeah, I mean, I remember Joe Morgan, Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Vitter Network, Rainbow Show, the channel Sports Network, the show. I'll probably take a break in a second. I remember Joe Morgan when he joined the Cincinnati Reds. And, he was stopping talking. Him and Johnny Bench were talking for a little while. And then he's in the locker room, and then him and Pete Rose were kicking it for a while. And then he said a guy came over to him and said, Joe, you know, can I talk to you for a second? He says, yeah. He says, Joe, you know, the way things work around here, you know, it's Johnny or it's Pete. You know, there are different factions here, and you don't, you know, it's one or the other. And Morgan, he didn't have to deal with it. He was a superstar himself. I mean, the great Sparky Anderson told
the team at spring training, I got two sets of rules here. I got rules for bench, Morgan, Perez, and Rose, and I got bench rules for everybody else. But,
the thing is that you do have these things.
I mean, when Dick Williams took over the Red Sox in 67, the first thing he did is he took the captainship away from Carl Yastrzemski. He said, there's only one captain around here, and that's me. So, I mean, so you do have these fractions, and you do have these players. I mean, let's go to the Dream Team. I mean, it's been long known that, you know, MJ wouldn't play on that team if Isaiah played on that team. And that's sad and touching. But, you know, team-wise, there are guys. I mean, the Detroit Pistons, Isaiah Thomas was the captain, and he was the guy. Supposedly there was some talk about he was instrumental in getting one of the guys traded. I mean, I don't think the Knicks had a guy like that. They were probably more of a team than anybody else, where there wasn't one guy that kind of ran the show. I mean, out in L.A., if you remember, Magic had said when Westhead came there, it's Westhead of me. And, you know, so you've always got guys who they're the guy. You know, I mean, can you play with this guy? I remember Marquise.
Is that why there was this hassle between him and Shaquille, and he was relieved that Shaquille was gone?
Well, to Kobe's defense on that. You know what? Let me come back a second. Bus called Kobe in and told Kobe that he wasn't bringing Shaquille back. You know what I mean? He said, I'm not bringing him back. I think he has a weight problem, so he's not coming back. So I want you to know this as you make your decision, okay? Because Kobe was thinking supposedly L.A. or not, and Dr. I will let us know more about it. But, you know, the Kobe and Shaquille thing was sad and touching, too. I mean, I think the bottom line is about winning, and I can't understand why they had a problem. And you know, a lot of people have told me, and the thing Larry Hardesty once told me one time, the great Larry Hardesty, the voice opens our show here, and he once told me one time, we were sitting in his place, he said, Doc, you know, when you hear stories about guys who don't give interviews, who don't sign autographs, who are kind of nasty to people, he said, Doc, and shooting, he said, Doc, you know, you can't say shit. He said, because everybody talks to you. And Kobe, you know, me and Kobe, you know, we had a little relationship. And I was stunned. You know what I mean? I mean, we're not as tight as me and Julius Erving and Mark Jackson. But I was stunned that they weren't getting along. And the nicer of the two guys, the guy I knew the longest, was Shaquille. And I wasn't aware of their problem.
Shaquille is nicer guys you want to meet.
Yeah, I've
observed this firsthand, and that's when I made my opinion about Kobe.
Hold on, we're coming back with you. Don't move. This is a break, gang. We'll be right back. Halfway mark. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth, Olympic Special. They're all here. They're in the house. Dr. I, Mel Cosell, Cincinnati Sea Leopards, and the Hoopster, but they should be back. Harold West should be joining us soon. Sports and Depth on the Blake. We had another Rainbow Show to tell. Sports and Depth is a show. Hello, LP and Rosa.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul, BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake with another Rainbow Soul. The channel Sports and Depth of the show. And Dr. I will be in just a second. We'll talk more about our buddy, Shaquille O'Neal. Brazil had a really outstanding Olympics to a certain degree. Picked up the first ever. They picked up two gold medals.
the first time they ever had a gold individual, Maria Dios, Sarah Menzies won the Olympic gold medal in judo, and then we had the first time a male had ever won a gold medal in gymnastics.
Parallel bars.
Yeah, the parallel bar. I'm trying to get the right name on that. But he was the winner, my good buddy. Antonio Zanini was the first Brazilian ever to win an individual gold on the gymnastic or artistic exercises. Arthur Zanini, which happened to be the 99th medal that Brazil had ever won in the Olympics. And he was the first ever male to win a gold medal in the airtight gymnastics. And Sarah, who was voted in the 2008 Olympics as the number one overall Olympian. She was the first Brazilian ever to win an individual gold medal in any event, male or female. And she was the first Brazilian ever to win a gold medal at the USS at the World Games 20 years older. And she was also the first Brazilian ever seated second. And as it was, she beat the defending champion from Romania. So they also picked up, as you know, a silver and losing to Mexico. Brazil has never won a gold medal in the Olympics. A lot has been back because one time there's some hanky-panky. So, I mean, it wasn't like this has always been like a straight-up move. Pelé, the great Pelé, and Ding Ding, and Sir Ding, all those guys didn't play Ravelloni. They definitely would have won a gold. There were some times where it didn't have some sort of, there was rules where World Cup players couldn't play, and this guy, players play. You know, Brazil last year, they won the 20 and under world gold medal as the best 20 and under players. And a lot of people thought they were going to do it here. They had won each one of the games. They had scored three goals in their games. No team had done that since 1968, that amount of points, but they had also given up five goals, which ironically was sort of a defensive deficiency. They only scored one goal. It seemed like Neymar, considered the third best player in the world, out behind Messi and Ronaldo, but he may surpass the 20-year-old phenom. There's big talk that Barcelona is trying to get him to come to play with them. Chelsea's already signed his superstar teammate, Oscar. Brazil will host the 2014 World Cup Games and the first Latin American country ever to host the Olympics, as they will do in 2016. Big opportunity got away from them, too. I mean, had they won the gold medal, they'd been defending the gold medal at the Olympics in their country, and it's something they could have took a psychological advantage into the 2014 World Cup Games. But the shocker here was that Spain, who won the Euro Cup and the World Cup, was bounced out. Not only bounced out, they lost 1-0 to Japan and then lost 1-0 to Honduras. So they lost two back-to-back. They were shut out. They didn't score a goal. And that was really a shocker. And some other things happened. Brazil had a silver medals winner in Dusty kind of thought he got the raw end of the deal in the middleweight division. And for the first time ever, they had female boxing. And we're talking about the young lady that won for us. But we'll get away from the Olympics now. Come on back to talk BS basketball.
Yeah, they robbed the Brazilian in the light heavyweight.
Yeah, you were saying that. And
they robbed them, man.
And, you know, this is the first time that, not the first time, but, you know, America has so many dominant. I mean, no country has won as many gold medals or medals in boxing like America. And the names that just renovate from the game, Floyd Patterson, who became heavyweight champion of the world, Cassius Clay, who became Muhammad Ali, heavyweight champion of the world, Joe Frazier, and also George Foreman, heavyweight champion of the world, Ray Charles Leonard, what a great champion he is, Mark Breland, gold medal champion, the Sphinx brothers, first brothers to win gold and become heavyweight champions of the world, they won gold medal. Leo Randolph, a name that people forget, he was out of that crew, he was the first guy to win a world championship from that 1976 team. And Howard
Mark
Davis
Breland just moved in my neighborhood down the street in Carroll Gardens.
Who's that?
Mark Breland just moved down the street in Carroll Gardens.
Carroll Gardens, yeah.
On Sackett Street.
Greatest amateur champion ever. Doctor, let's get back. Now, we were talking about Shaquille, the Kobe thing. Let me set the stage.
Yeah, Kobe,
I remember
not a nice guy. Period.
Well, you know, I've heard that Billy Paul. So my good friend Derzico Tomasso Jr. in Brazil, Billy's rebound. And I remember going to the locker room and I saw Willis Reed talking to Shaquille. And I said, "What's up, Cap?" Willis Reed and Shaquille O'Neal and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I always call him Cap. So what's up, Cap?
Right.
He said, "I'm just going over here and try to talk to Shaquille." And I was like, "What?" And he says, "Well, you know,
was having some problems with COVID. I'm like, what? And I was like, you know, I'm here they are on the brink of winning back-to-back championships. They're the best team in the league. And there's problems, and it's that great line, sad and touching. Dr. A, Dr. I, take it from there now. Give us some more on that subject.
Here's my observation that I observed. I was at when the Lakers played the Nets, the victory party was at, because it was the game was here, so the victory party was at Mickey Mantle's restaurant.
Yeah, you're right. Bill Lederman had the party down. Bill came down to Mickey Mantle's. Because their hotel was right next door.
Right. And they were at the Ritz-Carlton. So Kobe is sitting in the corner, and Shaq is in another corner, and Kobe's all alone by himself. So a couple of the players, their families were there, okay? And they go up to Kobe and said, look, my father and mother, they would like to meet you. Kobe puts up his finger, waves it back and forth, no. He did that to at least two of the players on his own team. And after seeing that was enough. And I'm sitting with Jerry Buss and his, you know, and his 5 19-year-olds looking straight out at him. And I said, I can't believe what I'm seeing.
You know,
and Shaq was never going to meet a guy.
I remember Kobe coming in, because Kobe was like the last one to come in. And he, you're right, he went off to the side there. And because I had said something to him, and he said, you know, he was, because I was sitting there talking with Phil and Buss's daughter, because me and Phil go back to his New York Knicks days, and then I was sitting in the corner talking to Shaquille, and you're right, Kobe came in, and I wasn't aware of the whole thing, because Fisher, they were just, we got a chance, me and Larry, to hold the trophy and take pictures,
to
have around his place, and I remember Kobe isolating himself, and I was a little taken back by it, because we had always been, you know, very close, and he was like, he kind of wanted to be alone, which is, how do you want to be alone at this time that was accomplishment by all of you in unison?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I can understand if you want to be alone if they had lost the game.
Yeah.
Now, the other things you're telling me, but I remember Kobe coming in, a cigar in his hand, and going over to a certain section, and the stories have been continuous. Like I said, I mean, we've been and talked in the future since then, but I remember that night that he didn't want to be alone, but there are things that have been said about a lot of people about, you know, Kobe, you know, not being, I mean, I think for a long time, didn't he have a problem with his father too?
Let's talk about the ultimate isolation. I met someone that was Kobe. They were renovating their kitchen in the house, and the house is a multi-level house. So he said that Kobe was very courteous to the crew working in the house. He said, but Kobe lived on separate floors from his wife. So that's the ultimate separation. That basically they lived on separate floors, and that they basically, you know, hardly spoke to each other. They just lived their own lives in the same building. So I was surprised. I thought they were divorced, but they showed pictures in the paper them together at the Olympics. So they're apparently still together in a sense. So
well, there was some gossip in the Olympics that he was hanging out with one of the Italian Olympians, a female.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the wife was uptight over that.
In the same, they had that in the same picture where they're showing him and the family. They're showing him with this woman watching swimming or whatever. So that was upset. I scratched my head at that one.
All right, you guys. Enough of this woman talk. That's what got Ochocinco in trouble. Let's go there.
I'm trying to point it out. What happened to Cincinnati C and the Hoopster? Because I wanted to, from what the latest I've heard, Roy McIlroy won the 8x8 strokes. He won the PGA, so he's the winner. And the first time in a long time, you had somebody that won a major that happened to win it again. It's his second major. I was really astonished by the talk about he may be the guy to break Jack Nicklaus' record, but that's only two.
He broke the record in the sense that he won the.
What was said? I understand he won by 8 strokes. What was said that he possibly could be the guy
Tiger Woods that's going to break the record. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But the guy's only got two. He's
a baby.
He's got two. He is a baby, but it's only two. Two is a long way.
He's where Tiger Woods was at the same stage of their career.
Age-wise, I believe he's the youngest to win a major, but he's not. We got to see what happens in the next couple of years.
Oh, of course. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it when they were both at that same age, 22, 23, basically, Tiger
same
had
thing.
Two and he had
and
two.
Major two. Okay, well, we'll see. I'm wondering what the heck happened to the rest of my crew here. Now, they Cincinnati C and the Hoopsa.
Well, I'm sure they're on the way back. Well, wait, Doc, don't forget the NFL season is upon us now. Also,
well, I gotta give. Listen, we have our dweeb of the week. You know, the old Chattachinko, whatever he wants to call himself, because he's been released.
It is now back to Chad Johnson. Let
well,
the
ladies I heard.
Chad Johnson anymore
Chad
either.
Johnson now.
He's just.
I'm upset at the hoops of. I mean, at Cincinnati C, because from what I heard from this altercation with the wife. I heard that the Dolphins cut him. He's gone.
Wow,
and it's,
my
and it's
Lord.
Been rumored, listen to this, it's been rumored
rumor.
That if
gone.
The Dolphins
he's
were
gone.
To cut him, it's been rumored that if
yeah,
the Dolphins
yeah,
were
yeah.
to
he
cut
is released.
Him, that the Jets
officially
may possibly pick
released.
Him up. No, the Jets, no one's going to pick up Chad Johnson, okay? No one.
Well, I don't think anyone
wow,
is either,
that's
but
sad.
That's the rumor. That is the rumor that they were considering.
Well,
making them even more dysfunctional over there, I guess.
Well,
major
I mean, he's a guy that seems to deteriorate over the course of the last 2 or 3 years. I mean,
he can't play anymore either. He's a marginal talent now. No one's going to take him after this incident.
Marginal, you're being kind by calling him a marginal talent.
T.O. is a marginal talent now.
Here. I mean, if he can't play with Tom Brady on the squad, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, he caught no
well,
pair, but
that was
one.
Window dressing because they didn't have a bona fide receiver. They used that big doofus who hurt his leg, and then the Hernandez and Wadsworth or whatever the other guy's name was. But he was just window dressing. I think he only caught a pass in the Super Bowl.
One pass, and then he sat down.
One catch for first down, and we didn't see him anymore.
We got to give kudos to the dude of the week, because, again, Chad is the dweeb of the week. We got to give our hats off to the greatest running back in New York history, the fourth leading running back all time in the NFL, who was just inducted last week into the NFL Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio.
Kurt Moore, I got to do a story. Come on, we're number 28.
Well, I'm going to give you an insight that nobody knows about.
Biblical.
I'm sitting with his family, okay, and his friends at the induction, and I look him back at me, and I see a familiar face, and I say, "Jason Williams, what are you doing here?"
Wow.
And me and Jason embrace because I know him for so long, and then I thought for 1 second, because Martin's making his speech saying, "My first stage of my life is playing football. My second stage is helping people."
Mm.
It was your answer.
Wow.
Curtis, when our guy was at his low point, reached out to Jason Williams. And that's why Jason was there. And it's a story which may break by Harvey Araton, because I'm in touch with Harvey, to do this story, because this is Curtis Martin is a very special guy, and you go to NFLnetwork.com and listen to that speech in full, it is maybe the most touching acceptance speech by any athlete in any Hall of Fame.
Not only was it touching, but it was just so revealing. Here's a guy who didn't want to play for football. I mean, he got the call from Parcells that they had drafted him, and he said, like, "Hey, you know, this is not what I want to do." He said, I've never had the passion, the zeal, or desire that all my contemporaries talk about.
Right.
And the pastor happened to be there, and the pastor said, "Well, you know what? Hold on, Curtis. You know, let's not worry about yourself here. Maybe, no, this can be an avenue to help." And this is the thing that I always, you know, the great line by Muhammad Ali, "Service to others is the rent you pay for your room on Earth. Dr. Martin Luther King, life's most persistent and most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? And in the Bible, the Son of Man came to serve and not be served. And Ali, you know, who has, he's made some of the most profound statements. Death is so near, and time is so short to do friendly acts of persuasion. Never put off tomorrow what you can do today. It's a great line by my mother. And I think about Oscar, and I talk about unselfish guys, and guys love to play with a guy who can pass a ball. Magic Johnson, Stockton, and Isaiah. And I remember, it just, you look at the effect of this guy who retired from basketball, the second highest scorer in the history of the game, and number one in assists. Walt Frazier said, if Oscar Robertson wasn't so unselfish, he could have set scoring records that have never been obtained. I mean, Oscar's a perfectionist now. He didn't want you out there not rebound, not making the play. But it's just, you know, and you, Curtis Martin, I mean, here's a guy, he wears number 28 because that's his favorite Bible verse. Okay? Here's a guy who didn't want to play football. You know, here's a guy who, you know, it was an avenue out, and it turned out to be an avenue all the way to the Hall of Fame. But it, a remarkable speech, and he talked about the helping of his mother, getting over the derogatory remarks and the horrible treatment
that his father had
so much so that she had gotten to the point. And another great line by Dr. Martin Luther King: forgiveness is not an occasional act, but a permanent state of mind. And this woman got to the point that she was feeding him and caring for him and doing, you know, it's amazing, that great line in the Bible, you know.
It's the power of forgiveness.
And the thing, you know, and how it had to hit him, and how it had to, I mean, how it turns a person, look at how I treated this lady, and she's caring for me. Look at how I treated this lady, and she's feeding me. And Curtis talked about, you know, Mom, I'm glad I was there, and thank you for being the mother. And I remember when the Baltimore Colts, Indianapolis Colts were playing the Jets in the first round of the championship game, and I got out there, and they didn't have my coach, and I have a nice picture of me and Curtis. She was going in, and I met Curtis's mother. It was the first time you had two African-American coaches in a championship game, and the Jets annihilated the Colts that particular game.
Right.
But I got a chance to meet her. But, you know, it's a speech that it wasn't about me. It was that great line that Gail Sayers said in his book, God is first, my family and friends are second, I am third. And it was a remarkable speech by a remarkable, not so much remarkable football player, because we know that. That's why he's there. But a remarkable human being. And once again, dovetailing in my Trust in God Sports in Depth Entertainment Artifacts Museum, I happen to have, I don't know if I have any autographs with him, but I do have, he promised me a pair, I have a pair of his spikes, which mean so much to me, because besides who they are, Curtis Martin is the oldest man ever to lead the NFL in rushing, supplanting how long the record stole, held the great running back, the first great fullback for the Cleveland Browns, Marion Motley. And well, Motley also have an autographed football with Marion Motley, Automatic, Otto Graham, Tom Landry. But there's a pair.
Two points, and they're actually related. Let's not forget that Curtis Martin ran over a 4.640. He could not break 4.6 in the 40, which means that here's a guy that basically his main attribute was his balance and his dislike for getting hit.
Mm.
You notice all the great backs, when they get hit, you never get a good piece of them. And that's why this guy was so durable. You couldn't get a good hit at him, because he would slither, his balance, his change of speed, absolutely made up for his lack of speed. And I'm relating that to basketball, because you named how many point guards just now? Any of them, and let's include Steve Nash in them. These guys, and Jason Kidd, we're talking the slowest point guard you will ever see.
A point guard is passing the ball, so he's not looking to score. You need the ability to pass the ball.
Look at the point guards you see today, okay?
coming out of high school, going into college.
Yeah, and that's a term I don't like.
They
point guard.
So
I mean, that's,
quick.
You're either guard or you're not
you
guard. Hold on, Dr.
That,
hold on a second. Rooney, is there any way you can jump out and try to get a hole and see what happened to Cincinnati, seeing the hoopster? Do you have Cincinnati's number?
I can try one. The other guy's number I don't have, Doc.
Okay, so try the one. Tell them to both get back with us.
I'll try the... No, I hope I can get back on this thing after I try to go out there.
No, you will be.
I may have C's, I'm not sure, but I'll give it a try.
Okay, 10-4. Okay, go ahead, Dr. I.
So my point is that, like you just said, that playing the point guard, and Donnie Walsh taught me this, the most important thing about a point guard is to be in rhythm with the rest of the team.
Yeah, okay.
So
he's the baton. And you know, I've never liked this point guard power forward nonsense. I mean, you're either a guard or you're not a guard. I mean,
right,
in our
right.
day, going back to Dr. I, how could you be a guard and you couldn't dribble, you had no jump shot? I mean, come
right.
on, what are you telling me? I mean, the great line
right.
that Luther Rackley once asked Oscar Robertson, Oscar, if you were playing today, would you be a point guard or shooter? And Oscar said, Luther, I'm a guard. And he gave a great analogy. He said, today's game, Mark Jackson brings the ball up and then he passes to Reggie Miller. I mean,
right.
you know, power forward, small. You know, if you're out in the park, you don't tell the guys, hey, man, I'm a point guard. You guys rebound. Hey, get your butt in and get some rebounds, man.
Right, right.
I've never bought into this, but it shows how the game has fundamentally broken down, and it shows how.
Right.
It's not that I said about George. You know, George was a great, great talent, but he also was fundamentally sound. He
right.
knew
well,
that's what
guard
made him
is a
better.
Guard.
And
yeah, I feel this. If you're training players, skill training, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every player should be a guard first. So if you're 7 foot, you have the same skill set as any other player. But
what
they do, they take the biggest kid, make him a center, and the kid never learns how to dribble, never learns how to shoot.
How good would
Shaquille O'Neal been if he had the skill set that he could shoot?
Well,
right?
You know what? Well, the ability to shoot,
you
actually have it.
You
don't. But you said
the
something.
Game.
You said something that when Dow Dawkins. And I get a chance. I want to catch up with Stevie Wonder again and ask him why he named him Chocolate Thunder. When Dow Dawkins came to the Sixers, I mean, I was at a Jewish house one time in summer. We were talking, and he said, you know, when Julius came to the Sixers, they were practicing one day, and Julius showed him a couple things, and he said nobody up until then had showed him anything from a basic, fundamental standard basketball. He'd come to the Sixers because, if I'm correct, he was Chuck Daly's guy, but nobody had taught him. Anyway, how to play it was back
right.
to the basket. You know, you bring a tremendous point, and
right.
I think a lot of that has been how college basketball has changed. Because you know, I need you to dribble. I need you to shoot. And Dusty, don't worry
right.
about it. You go down a rebound.
Well,
you know, Doc, you know you. Everybody's
special. Let me bring out two examples.
Go ahead.
Lamar Odom, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lamar Odom, who's 6'10", 6'11". He has point guard skills because that's how he was brought up. He was brought up as a point guard, then he grew 8 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Wait till Anthony Davis plays his first year in the NBA because what no one knows except basketball people, he has point guard skills. He just didn't show them at Kentucky because it wasn't part of the system. He took 5 or 7 shots.
Back up. Great point
yeah.
you make. Great point. It wasn't part of the system. And I think this is why guys have to pick the right college.
Right, right. And that's in football or basketball. You got to play the system that fits your skills.
Mm.
So, now I got a good piece of good news.
Go ahead.
Everyone's knocking New York City basketball with kids, right?
Right.
Well, we had a tournament game. It was for rest in peace, the big guy, Mr. Strickland, who passed away. There was a second annual Strict tournament at CCNY last night.
Okay.
And it
Dr.
was New
I,
York
you
City.
You got to keep us abreast of these things, too, because we like to cover them all. If you're there,
right.
we can do a show and let you broadcast live for us there, too. Okay.
Okay. So
okay, good,
we have New York City against USA. The USA team had 5 of the top players in the country, high school players in the country. They're the famous twins from Houston, one kid from Dallas, one kid from Cali, from all over the country, okay? And we lost to them by 1 point because one of our kids missed a dunk at the end of the game. The absolute, hands down, 2 best players on the court, Isaiah Whitehead and Jermaine Lawrence.
Mm.
Hands down.
Isaiah totally outplayed these two twins that are ranked number 4 and number 6 in the country as players. And they were seniors, and Isaiah is just going to be a junior. That's how good Isaiah Whitehead is going to be.
Mind
he made
blowing.
His play. Listen to this play, Doc. I'm sitting with Dale Davis. Dale Davis of the Pacers happened to be there.
Dale
so
Davis.
I'm friendly with Dale a long time. We're sitting there. Isaiah dribbles over half court. A wing is breaking on the fast break on the left side of the court. He hasn't reached half court yet. He behind the back hits the guy in stride for a dunk under the basket on a behind the back pass over half the length of the court. I never saw that in my life.
Wow.
Unbelievable. And he hit his J's, and he could be, and I told this to, I put my life on the line, and rep on the line, I told Donnie Walsh this, I said, we may have the next Roger Brown. And I said it about Isaiah
Roger
when he was
Brown,
a freshman.
From Wingate High School, ABA
yep.
star with the Pacers. Mel Cosell, any word for my guys?
Hey, left them a message, Doc.
Okay, 10-4. Real quickly now, we got a good half hour. Rooney, let's get back. Are we panicking with this Jets Giants opening series game? Giants had a good game, no defense. Jets, did they leave all their fight in practice there, Rooney?
Hey, well, the Jets are getting all the angst, you know, because of the Tebow thing and all the dysfunction in camp, and I guess the. Even though it's the exhibition season, they look like it was exhibition season. They're going to need an offensive line, Doctor. You know, I'm still on the fence with Sanchez. I mean, he definitely regressed last year, but in fairness to him, the guy really doesn't have any receivers too tough to speak of. He doesn't have an offensive line to speak of. He doesn't. I don't put a whole lot of faith in Green. So to me, he doesn't really have a good halfback or fullback to speak of. I mean, you know, if you're going to be critical of the guy, you got to give him some stuff to work with. I mean, you know, you may laugh, but to me, maybe the best half/fullback on the team may be Tim Tebow. Meanwhile, the Giants go quietly under the radar about their business. Their corners are suspect. However, they have a monstrous pass rush. And you know, defensive line, led by my guy. I don't know if I should say his name because I know you're tired of it. But, Doc, as I always said, Jason Pierre-Paul, that's the man on that line.
Oh,
and you and the rest of those guys get it done. So, I'm sorry, Doc?
I remember watching the Dallas game in Brazil, my beloved Fortaleza, Brazil, and I remember Chris Collinsworth saying something after that game. He said, off this game alone, he's first team All-Pro, and he should make All-Pro. You know, so, I mean, the guy's a great defensive player, which always has been the hallmark of the Giants, something I kind of didn't understand and kind of did to a certain degree, but they've always had the ability to give you great defensive players, the greatest of them all, the great Lawrence Taylor. And I was talking with somebody, and you talked about the great Herb Adderley, and I remember the line I'd heard about Adderley was that he was so respected by Johnny Unitas that if Johnny Unitas came to the line and saw Herb Adderley on a certain end, he wasn't going to throw the ball to him.
That's true.
Well, you know, Doc, and as far as the Giants are concerned, you know, I really think that not just because they're winning and won championships, but if you see the way that the great quarterbacks, Jock, this is when the great quarterbacks get it done, okay? They get it done in the 2-minute mark of the game, last 2 minutes, in overtime, and on the road. And Eli Manning has shown that, I mean, from my opinion, Doc, the guy's one of the top money quarterbacks in the league. I mean, seriously, I'd say he's in the top 5 easily of money quarterbacks in the league.
He's the greatest fourth quarter quarterback statistically all time.
Manning has won games where guys have to done extraordinary things, and he won his first Super Bowl over a crazy, insane catch. And there's no way in the world you're going to tell me that Eli Manning threw that ball in that spot for him to catch. Okay, that's out.
And then Manningham makes another great catch in this last game. So until I can see him win by taking the drive and running the ball and hitting some passes where guys are making some routine catches, I'm not buying this Hall of Fame stuff. I'm not buying
him. Oh, the guy's got a ticket to the Hall, Doc. Guy's going to the Hall of Fame.
I don't know. I mean,
you don't know.
That, but I'm
Doc, he won
I'm
two
not putting him
he
in the same
two,
breath
he won
with Johnny Unitas and Joe Namath and Joey Montana and his brother or Brady. I mean, he hasn't showed me that. I mean, in the game last in the Super Bowl, Brady was the better quarterback. Brady was
no
the
way.
Better quarterback.
No way.
That's
Doc,
the middle of
line.
Line. That's
no,
the middle
no,
of
no,
line.
No,
okay.
No,
no, no. You just started an argument now.
Hands down,
that's
the best
the
quarterback on the field was Eli Manning. Hands down.
If Manningham doesn't make that catch.
That was a great throw. That was a great throw, Doc.
Hold on. Let's go back to the first Super Bowl. Was that a great throw when the guy went
yes.
up? Oh,
yes, it was.
It was an errant throw. It was a high throw, and the guy made a great throw.
Which I meant to put in,
If David Tyree had fallen flat on his back, he would have dropped that pass. He got an assist from the defender because when the defender fell under him and he arched his back, he arched his back.
Remember the very quick point, remember the very quick point. Look, if Ifs and Buts were candy and nuts, every day would be Christmas, okay? The fact of the matter is he had the ball in position for these guys to make the catch. The fact of the matter is he's won two Super Bowls. The fact of the matter is he is an elite quarterback.
Correct.
The fact of the matter is he most likely is going to the Hall of Fame.
Correct.
I don't know. What does the guy have to do? Stand on his head and sing for you guys to give the guy to respect that he's doing?
Everything you said. I have Eli's autograph, Doc. I'm going to give it to you. I got a nice picture of Eli with his autograph. I know you like that stuff.
The guy is, no question. Okay, I have to mute you guys because I'm talking, okay? All right, so the guy is an outstanding quarterback. The guy is a winner. The guy is a champion. It's just right now, he is not in the same class for my money as Tom Brady, as Joe Namath, as Johnny Unitas, as Otto Graham. And I muted you guys because, and I don't buy all that nonsense about championships, okay? Because Sam Jones and Casey Jones, they have a lot more championships than Jerry West and Oscar Robertson. They're not better than Jerry West and Oscar Robertson. Sack Sanders won more championships when he had one as opposed to Elgin Baylor. He's not greater than Elgin Baylor. I'm not saying that Manning is not an outstanding quarterback. I'm not saying that he's not working on greatness. I'm just saying right now that for my money, okay, he's not in the same class as the other guys, and the two Super Bowls have been games where he has been a big part of the winning, but he was not the reason for the winning, okay? And the defense did some outstanding things, and Dusty, you brought a tremendous point up because that whole catch was a series of things that was out of their control, okay? Okay, he got out of the grasp of the defensive player, but that's not where he wanted to throw the football. Tyree made a great catch, and lo and behold, the defender had more to do with him catching the ball, and we got to quit agreeing, than he did in catching the ball. So there was a lot of factors that went into that. It wasn't a throw that was on the money. It wasn't a throw that he could catch and keep running. Manny, no question. I mean, I liked the kid when he first came up. I mean, as a kid, there was a particular game. He said, hey, that was on me. The guy, and you can't tell me now that he'd won two Super Bowls, and his brother's only won one Super Bowl, that he's better than his brother? Okay, you're not going to tell me he's won two Super Bowls that he's better than Joe Namath? You're going to tell me that he's better than Johnny Unitas, who never won a Super Bowl? I'm not buying it. Yes, he probably has, if he keeps going like this, he's going to the Hall of Fame. Yes, no question about it, he's one of the elite quarterbacks of the game today. But I'm not talking immortality, I'm not talking greatness. You got to do it for a little while. Two Super Bowls don't make you the greatest quarterback. I've always had reservations on Terry Bradshaw. I mean, Terry Bradshaw's defense is the one that carried him. You know, Bradshaw's defense was the thing that carried him. I mean, and then, I mean,
Doc, why
did the Giants win the Super Bowl this time around? They won it because of their defense. They won it because Pierre Paul beat the shit out of Brady, and Brady became the chicken shit that he became.
Exactly.
And hit him enough time.
We got to watch the terminology here. Watch the terminology.
All right. Chicken duty.
You got to understand that in the two Super Bowls, Eli Manning bested Tom Brady. I don't care how good Tom Brady is.
I'm not saying that he bested, but he's not in the same class as Tom Brady. Okay?
You're correct.
And if you want to use a criteria, okay, if you're going to use a criteria that you have used, how many Super Bowls does Brady have?
42.
Okay, in the conversation then. If that's what you're going to go by. If that's what you're going to go by, and then how many Super Bowls has Brady been in?
You're correct,
okay?
Doc.
Okay.
Brady is the greater quarterback.
But nobody's taking that away from Tom Brady.
But, Doc, I think that he belongs in the conversation is what I'm saying.
What did you say, Ronnie?
He belongs in the conversation.
He belongs in the conversation about Brady. He belongs in the conversation about his brother. I'm not saying that
he's better than those guys, but he belongs in the conversation. He doesn't belong in the conversation.
He belongs in the conversation.
As the caliber quarterback that they are. He belongs in the conversation as a Super Bowl winner. He belongs in the conversation as an elite quarterback.
MVP,
he is not the kind of quarterback. Okay, and if for no other reason, for his brother, for no other reason, and the reason why I've always had Peyton as a superior quarterback, than any, because Peyton is a quarterback. Okay, the problem with today's quarterbacks is the same thing the problem with today's basketball players. How are you a guard with no jump shot? Or a guard that can't dribble. How can you be? And that's why I never thought Roger Staubach. I love Roger. Met him. But I've never thought Roger Staubach was in the same class with Namath, okay, and Bradshaw, and all
I'll
of the quarterbacks in
that
particular era. Because
I'll disagree with that one.
Because Staubach never called his own play. Landry always called. So which meant that if the play didn't work, I didn't
but
call
it. But that wasn't Roger's fault.
I don't care. I don't care if it's not his fault. The point is, you are not a true quarterback. If you know every time what the pitch is going to throw, how can you be a hitter? I know he's throwing a curveball. Time the pitcher throws the ball, you know where he's going to throw? So you're a great hitter? I know he's throwing
the
fastball.
How do you know? Because your premise is correct. But how do you know how many audibles Roger ran compared to how many of
let me tell you something.
Of
under
Landry's
Coach Tom Landry,
that he run.
Roger couldn't have had too many audibles. Okay,
no,
else he wouldn't have been in there. Okay, I understand.
No,
there were times that he audible, but I'm going to say 75% of the time he didn't audible.
Well,
and the fact that statistically, but what
if he audible? You're probably correct statistically.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say Roger audible 25% of the time, and 75% of those times the plays are successful, you think Landry would have taken him out of the game?
No,
of course not.
On the other hand, Roger Staubach was a great player. I'm just trying to say that if I've got a choice of three center fielders on my team.
Right.
Willie Mays
is
the first center fielder.
Right.
I mean, you know, Willie Mays. I'm not going to say that there's
I'll
not room for Curt Flood. Okay?
Right.
I'm not going to say Curt Flood ain't on his. Okay, Curt,
yeah.
I got you there too. I got Willie. Here's Mickey Mantle. But I'm trying to say, when I'm talking about esoterically a center fielder, it's Willie. Brooks Robinson. Brooks Robinson and Mike Smith had the same batting average as Hall of Famers, 267. How could you be a third baseman and you hit 260? I don't think Brooks Robinson hit. I got to check it. I don't think Brooks Robinson hit more than 250 home runs. Third base is a power spot.
He definitely was in it as a fielder primarily.
But third base is not a fielding position. I mean, I want a third baseman to hit the ball. But
you want him
like
Schmidt.
I mean,
it's 40 homers.
Yeah, but I mean, but you know, I mean, but for. I mean,
but
Brooks.
Yeah, but Doc, listen to this. Because you go back in time with me, you take Billy Cox, who played third base at the Brooklyn Dodgers, who was a great glove man, but a lightweight hitter.
What you say about Billy Cox is the same thing you could say about Cleet Boyd. Great glove, great arm, couldn't hit a ring. You're right.
But at that time, okay, if you go back, and I don't know the answer to this, but if you check the records, I think there weren't that many very good hitting third basemen.
Eddie Matthews may have been the beginning
right.
of the long ball power hitting third baseman.
Yeah, he's same era, you know, as
yeah,
third
we have to ask Dusty
because
Dusty was back there with Babe Ruth and Dusty would know. Dusty, is any truth to that?
Is Eddie Matthews in the Hall of Fame? Doc, is Eddie Matthews in the Hall of Fame?
I think there's a little mix up here. First of all, a great third baseman, Mike Schmidt. Greg Nettles, all them guys. This is my thinking that in those positions or any position, you look more for the defense than the offense.
if you look at a guy who
all of a sudden it's go against Doc Knight here. As good as I've been to you, Dusty, now it's go against Doc Knight.
And who was labeled a human vacuum cleaner. He took a lot of runs. He took a lot of plays. He took a lot of
tremendous points.
Scoring singles out of the game.
Nah, you're great.
But wait a minute. Let me finish. But he didn't hit that much. Look at Rod Carew, who was a good glove, gold glove, and all he had was what 100 and some odd home runs. I mean, but I would rely more on a singles and doubles hitter. That's what he was.
Than
a home run hitter.
The point you make is so valid because you look at, we're talking 267, and we're talking Rod Carew at 331. And I mean, you look at the old Dodgers who Garvey was a great in first base. But you look at a guy like, well, Don was an exception too. But there are guys who didn't hit high long ball numbers, but hit 300. Pete Rose. Pete Rose is a great guy. He could play third. He could play first. And he's an example like Carew. Pete's not going to knock 15 home runs for you, but he's going to hit 320 something. And you're right. I mean, if I got Dr. I singled, you singled, I want to see a guy who hit another single as a guy who maybe strike out and pop up to the outfield. Tremendous point you made there, too. Doc Stanley, Sports Network, the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Network, the show of the Hoopster was with us early. So was Cincinnati C. I don't know what happened with them, but Dr. I is back with us. We're here, Doc. I got your numbers to make sure you're with us every week. Probably going to try to do something for the week. Dusty, real quick, the boxing, and we'll get back here.
Yeah.
We got another 10 minutes left. Okay, we've got we've got Martinez.
Yeah.
Chavez.
Julio Cesar Chavez,
here's the big thing. Why are they weighing in?
What do you want to know, my child? I'll tell you.
Why are they continuing to weigh in the day before the fight? I mean,
Doc, it's the weak knee pressure, all around pressure, where now the promoter is the one that sets the pace and the rules. Now, I remember Hasim Rahman told me, he says, I cannot go. I was industrialized and used to 12 rounds. I cannot go no 15 rounds. And then Holyfield told me, well, it's for the health of the fighter. And I've heard that echoed by the commission doctors, for the health of the fighters. My God, what happened to the other fighters when there was less protection and less this going 15 rounds? The other day we were talking about a 70-round fight. You know, so
61 rounds. Yeah, 61 rounds.
Yeah. So now let's talk about the Monday. Why can't we have not only 15 rounds but also the weigh-in the day of the fight? Because of the fact that it's the weak knee commissions who allow these variances, and with the pressure of the promoters, well, of course. And then there's the alliance of the fact that the promoters pay the salary of the judges. They practically run the commission.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have the new vice president running mate, Barack Obama, Destinio Baby Oates.
No, but that's the problem.
This is a question, Doc Sanders, but that has to be asked. Because those who don't know, there was a time where you weighed in the day before the fight. You weighed in the day of the fight, 12 o'clock,
yeah.
And it's changed. Dr. I want to come back to you real quick.
The thought pattern,
why did New York let Lynn go?
Why did New York let Lynn go? It was the decision of the owner of the team, again, James Dolan, to let him go. Because he was embarrassed by Lynn. He was embarrassed by Lynn coming, or his agents coming back to him, and the fact that Houston raised the bar dollar-wise, that they embarrassed Mr. Dolan, and Dolan says, I don't want this guy. And that's what happened.
But embarrass him like what? I'm confused.
In other words, the original, here's Houston trying to sign this guy as a limited free agent, okay?
Right,
and
okay.
Basically the Knicks can keep him if they match the offer. So the original offer was for, not even estimating numbers, we'll say, let's say $50 million, right? And that was the original, but then they added to the pot. Houston added to the pot, which means that the Knicks would have been forced to add to the pot to the point that there would be a luxury tax of $50 million if they signed him over the length of the contract. And that's why Dolan was ticked off, and he was so ticked off at Lynn and his agent that he said, okay, I don't want Lynn. So unfortunately, the Knicks had the backup to get Felton back, where losing Lynn, to me, hurts a lot because he's not only a good player, he's going to be a very good player. Plus, he brings in people, and Houston wanted him because, don't forget, who was the star player for Houston over the years? A big Chinese guy who got hurt. So the audience and fan base was there, and they had to replace that fan base.
It's great for them to replace
Chinese with Chinese. I'll just make the last comment about Dolan is a buffoon. As long as he owns the Knicks, don't expect the Knicks to win a championship or come close.
Rooney, you buying that? As long as Dolan's at the top, the title.
I'm not a huge Dolan fan, Doc. I'm really not a huge Dolan fan, and I think the Doc was right. What happened was he got ticked off because Lynn had an original deal. And I think the Knicks were actually considering matching. What happened is he went back and they restructured it.
Right, correct.
Which wasn't friendly to the Knicks.
Right.
And I believe Dolan got all ticked off because I think in the third year, I think originally, Doc, I think it was supposed to be like 8-8-8. And then they restructured it to make it like 5-5-15 in the third year, which was totally uncapped friendly.
But here's the thing, because I asked Donnie Walsh about this. You see, they could have matched the offer, and if things weren't working out after the 2 years, they could have traded him.
Indeed, that's true.
But they would have never had to pay them the 13, or they could have at that point restructured the deal after the second year with him and restructured the deal, because if he was the very, very good, great player that I think he will be, after the 2 years, they could have offered him an extended contract. So they could have worked that out. It was only the fact that Dolan's a moron that they didn't do that. That was easily done. But Dolan took away the general manager's power, just as he took away Donnie Walsh's power when he gave away the whole team to give Carmelo, who was coming to the Knicks anyway. So he did the same thing with Glenn, and Glenn being the perfect general manager for Dolan, who was basically a guy who was silent all the time. He just stayed it because he's getting paid $3 million to be the general manager. So he's willing to have Dolan ruin the team because he's still getting paid $3 million.
Well, let me ask you something. How does he explain or justify bringing Jason Kidd, who was supposed to be a mentor for Lynn? And look what Jason Kidd is now, you know, DWI.
Hold on. Okay. Rooney, I need you to close us out, and then we'll do a couple of minutes, mic on, lights off. Hear me, Rooney. Tell everybody goodbye.
Thank you, Lana. The Sports In-Depth Nation's been here. The Sports In-Depth panel's been here. I'm Mel Smith, Jr. I've been here. We've been here via the courtesy of the Blake Radio Network. And the straw that stirs the drink's been here. And that's Doc Stanley. Thank you, Doc.
Gentlemen, don't move. We'll do mic on, lights off for a few minutes. Stanley Turrington's in the back. Lead thoughts. Live your life today and stand before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent and most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others. The room, let you pay for your room on earth. That's Muhammad Ali. That great line, death is so near, life is so short. To do friendly acts quick. I say,
to buy my heart. God bless you all and trust in God. The number one African-American sportscaster in the history of New York City Radio. You're going to tell us good night. The one and only Larry the Legend Hardesty.
Good night, Doc.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
And always going to do a couple of quick minutes here with John Coltrane playing the background. Dr. I want you to answer that question for Dusty. Dusty, finish that question.
Well, the idea is that Dolan screwed up big time because I'm very sure he could have met what the Rockets were offering, what Houston was offering Lynn. I think he was looking for an excuse not to sign him up. That's number one. But then again, how does he justify bringing Jason Kidd here with a good purse? And the inference was he was supposed to be a mentor to Jeremy Lin. So now we don't need Jason Kidd. Yeah. So how does he, how does he come around and justify that? Because they're keeping Jason Kidd.
They've got to keep him now. I mean, he was going to be a mentor, but I think Kidd was going to play a nice amount of minutes. And economically, it's a better deal for you. And still, from a point guard position, and we'll wrap it up in a minute. Dr. I and Mooney, Jason Kidd is the better, if that's the term you want to use, point guard. He's a better passing guard than what Lynn was. Yes or no?
Yes, he'll be a better passing guard than one of the greatest top three passing guards of all time.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking that great line from George Allen. The future is now.
So I would basically say this. If you check Jason Kidd's record to bring up this DUI, okay, which we don't know the details of, he's been in the league 20 years. How many times have you heard him in trouble, except the one time that they claimed that he hit his wife, who happened, and I won't get into that subject, but I would have been
wrong.
And
you know what, Dr.
Bingham, I don't think he hit
him. Both times that you heard about having problems, he happened to be in New York City area.
Yeah, it was domestic problems, so what? But how many times has he been in the news negatively? Not too many. So I don't take that DUI too seriously if he was out partying in the Hamptons, which he does do. He's a 40-year-old guy, so I don't take that seriously.
Well, this is what I'm saying. He's the 40-year-old guy.
His role is a backup, a veteran backup that would add to any team. So he's fine.
Yeah, but this is what I'm saying. He was really a backup to the young cat because we need, when you sign up people to your franchise, you're looking at the future. You're not looking at the past of what this guy did in the past, what he's going to do in the future.
The future is now. I mean, the future is now.
But with the younger bodies, how many years
New York City, Dusty. Hold on, and Rooney, I want you to come on this. The thing with New York wants a championship now. We're not talking, Rooney.
But not with senior citizens.
N O W. Rooney.
Hey, Doc. New York is definitely the what have you done for me lately?
Me now.
Yeah, but you see, you're not going to do it with old dudes. You're going to bring it with young dudes, man.
Yeah, but he's a backup point guard that's going to mentor whoever the point guard is, whether it was Lynn or Felton. He had veteran leadership. He's great in the locker room, and you need guys like that around because if you look at most teams that win championships, there's a veteran core, or even if it's a young veteran core, you got to remember Wade and LeBron. They've been in the league 8 years each, so eight years each. That makes them veterans. So even though they're not 40 years old, even at 28, 29, they're veteran players. In most
and
championship teams are made up of veterans.
They're going to have to do something in regard to the spacing of Carmelo and the big guy, the big ball forward.
Well, listen, they'll work that out.
They're going to have to do something with the spacing. Carmelo has shown
in the Olympics what he can do, and maybe it's a good thing that we're going to bring the other guy off the bench.
He'll figure it out.
Well, if you can convince him of that, Doc, yeah, I can see sort of like a double tier thing, yeah.
That ain't going to happen, but Woodson knows what to do. Leave it to him.
Yeah. And you know what? It's a good situation to have. It's a good problem to have, which means that if it's a good problem to have, then maybe Philly is not a problem after all.
It's not a problem. They'll know what to do. Plus, Felton is a better pick-and-roll guy than Lynn. He's a very good pick-and-roll guy, and that's part of Meyer's strength. So it's going to make him better. Carmelo, is without D'Antoni, is in a position to maximize his talent. D'Antoni put him in a position to fail, and he hated D'Antoni's guts. And as soon as D'Antoni was gone, you saw the real Carmelo.
I still want to see the spacing between Stoudemire and Carmelo. It's something about the spacing here. I want to see how they work it out.
They'll work it out. This will be a good team, not a championship team.
I didn't realize how important spacing was, and I remember talking to my good buddy, Trent Tucker, and I told him I didn't see the merit of Tony Kukoc, and he said something that both of you guys have just brought to our Footsteps Nation. He said, you know, Kukoc is very important to the spacing of the team. And you said they're going to get it together. It's an important issue. It's a vital issue, and it's something people don't see. But you better work it out. And I didn't understand how vital it was, though, the spacing and what it could be done. And like you
see, what spacing means actually is your three-point shooters are spread out. So that you always have, in D'Antoni's offense, it's three three-point shooters spaced out. So you notice that a guy like Novak, he's always in that right corner. You notice there's always someone in the left corner, and then there's someone in between the point guard and that corner. And that's the spacing in the court that opens up the middle of the court for penetration and kickouts. Okay? So that's what you consider spacing on the court, is where your three-point shooters line up.
Boy, the lessons of it. Gentlemen, we're going to let it go. We're going to be back next week this time. Dr. I has come back home.
I'll be here next week, Doc.
The new running mate for the president, Dusty Lois.
Yeah.
So with that, gentlemen, we're going to say goodnight. We'll be back here next Sunday at 9 o'clock. And we'll probably stay tuned, fans. We'll probably do something during the week. Lightheartedly, we'll probably say goodnight one more time. Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure to be
God
where
bless,
you are.
Doc. God bless.
God bless. Take care.
Dr. I, say
goodnight. Good night. Yeah.
Good night.
Larry, tell everybody good night.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.